inshallah ta'ala, when you abuse of Prophet, when you insult him, nauzubillah, and then when you keep doing it again and again, then we'll definitely respond. Everybody in this world will respond if you keep hurting their sentiments.
In retaliation to controversial remarks of French president against Islam, protesters insulted his images. Anti-France sentiments have surged suddenly at an unprecedented level after repeated incidents of blasphemy of Islam. Similar protests were also held across Pakistan. Like elsewhere in the Muslim world, people have started boycotting French products in Pakistan. Prime Minister Imran Khan says that France under President Macron is encouraging Islamophobia, which is creating further polarization and marginalization of Muslims in the West, that he believes would inevitably lead towards radicalization in the world. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Outside the French embassy in London, angered British Muslims gathered to vent their frustrations. The protest comes amid rising violence in France over the ongoing debate of freedom of speech versus freedom to insult.
This is just one of the many protests taking place across the Muslim world. Muslims are indeed angry over what they say is deep insult by Western society led by France against Islam and its holiest figures. France claims that it's defending freedom of speech, but Muslims say that they feel indiscriminately persecuted in France and are targeted relentlessly by Western political leaders and by media sources too.
The focus of the anger was squarely pointed on the French president for his passionate defense of anti-Islam insults.
First and foremost, he needs to apologize and he needs to make a law that freedom of speech should have some limits. This is not freedom of speech. If I come and say to your father, if I started swearing at him, do you think that is freedom of speech? That's not. In the whole world, there are 1.7 billion Muslims. They will be ready to sacrifice their life in the name of Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. That the message should be very clear.
However, protesters also made clear why defending the Prophet is so important.
It insults us, it insults the entire Ummah, the entire 1.7, if not more, billion people around the globe, because our Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is closer to our hearts. He is more dear to us than the entire world, our family, our parents, children, whoever it may be. Anyone in this world does not compare to our Prophet beloved Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam.
Not only is it just disrespectful, it's just the mere fact that I wouldn't do that to anyone else's religion, or mock it in any kind of form, or like, let alone do such an outrageous move, especially if you're in such a position of power. It's not only just disrespectful, it makes me feel quite hurt.
And the fact they disrespected us while doing nothing, this is really disrespectful. And that's why we're here. We're here to prove that we're here for our Prophet. Because without our Prophet, we're nothing. We wouldn't be Muslims. And I'm very proud to be Muslim. Alhamdulillah. The Prophet means everything. And the Prophet must mean everything. Because I adore him more than mom, my dad, my siblings, everyone that I'd love. Because he is the reason that I'm Muslim. He is the reason that I'm going to go to Jannah, heaven. He is everything to me.
Muslim resentment against France is still growing. Will Macron finally back down or choose to stand by his anti-Islam policies? The answer for now still remains unclear. Robert Carter, London.
Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah strongly denounced the latest crime committed in France while stressing that Islam prohibits the killing of the innocent. He said all Muslims agree on glorifying and defending the dignity of Prophet Muhammad, yet they reject blaming every individual crime on Islam.
It's wrong for France or any other side to put the blame for a crime committed by a specific person on a person's religion, or to put the blame on the followers of the same religion of the person who committed the crime. If a criminal is a Muslim, no one has the right to put the blame on Islam, or to put the blame on Muslims, whether in France or anywhere else in the world.
Hezbollah's leader called on France to reevaluate their stances and policies to see where they are responsible for the current crimes.
There's a Takfiri terrorist ideology which endorses killing for mere differences in religion, ideology, politics, or disagreements on any detail, and they commit monstrous crimes. You protected this ideology, the Americans, the U.S. administration, the French officials, the European officials. You protected them. You gave them all your support. You facilitated their infiltration into Syria and Iraq. You helped fund and arm these groups until they had fighting capabilities. Now they're surprised that they're groups that behead people.
Observers stress that it is the same policy that created Daesh that is now creating that hatred against Islam.
The West needs to see what they made. They made the groups that behead people and bomb churches and mosques, that kidnap and massacre people. They made them, and they are the ones moving them and giving them media coverage and conferences and funding them. And even before the creation of these terrorist groups like Daesh, the biggest terrorist act in human history committed by the West was establishing Israel in the region on the land of Palestine. That was the basis of all terror.
Lebanon has been one of the countries where anger is mounting over France's anti-Islam rhetoric. Protesters held a rally facing the residence of the French ambassador, denouncing the French president's defense of offensive caricatures of Prophet Muhammad.
Said Hassan Nasrallah said France and the West harbor the same Takfiri terrorism, which is committing crimes in Europe and all over the world. Said Nasrallah called on France to address the roots of the problem instead of making anti-Islam accusations. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Violence has surged across Afghanistan over the past weeks, with attacks and blasts killing hundreds of civilians in the country. Based on a recent UN report, some 6,000 Afghan civilians were killed or maimed in Afghanistan within last 8 months. The UN blames the Taliban for the violence and for much of the civilian casualties, just as the Afghan government holds the militant group responsible. The armed wings of the Afghan government stressed that they are trying their best regarding their missions and responsibilities to protect civilians. Afghan locals also praised the efforts of Afghan military forces in pounding terrorists. But in the meantime, they blame the U.S. for not properly implementing the bilateral security agreement between Kabul and Washington. The bilateral security agreement was signed between Afghanistan and the United States back in September 2014. Now, many Afghans name the deal as ineffective regarding the security situation in the country. This is one of the reasons behind people's call for the revocation of the agreement.
The agreement has proved to be futile and ineffective on the security situation in Afghanistan. Terrorist groups are challenging Afghan forces in different fronts across the country despite the strong resistance of government troops.
I think it's better for our government to pull out of the agreement because it has proved to be not in line with our interests so far. The rising violence and war claim the lives of our beloved ones on a daily basis.
Some others also argued that the silence of Washington regarding Pakistan's frequent rocket attacks on some border provinces of Afghanistan also contradicts with the bilateral security agreement, as it holds the U.S. responsible to support Afghanistan against such foreign attacks.
Under the agreement, the United States is committed to support Afghanistan if the country faces any serious external threat to its territory, but we have not seen any reaction of Washington to repeated Pakistani rocket attacks on our eastern provinces.
Although the deal highlights U.S. responsibilities in confronting foreign threats, it's better not to rely on such deals. The history has shown that players like the U.S. have always been after their own interests.
President Ashraf Ghani's government signed a deal with hope and optimism as the agreement seemed promising for country's security. Almost 7 years later, some key political leaders in Afghanistan, including former President Hamid Karzai, unanimously described the bilateral security agreement with the U.S. as a futile platform as the country faces an increase in violence. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
T- Tufts University has recently published a report that compares the rate at which Americans aged between 18 and 29 have voted in U.S. elections in recent years. The report shows that the age group's participation has gradually increased, reaching its highest in 2018. The growth also was observed in key swing states, which can prove decisive in who will enter the Oval Office and control the Senate. Experts believe the rise in voting among young Americans is due to the rejection of the policy adopted by U.S. politicians.
The Pew Research Center poll saying already that this generation, 77% of them rejected Trump policies, even back in January. So, of course, there's reason to suspect that what happened to all of us in the last months is going to, that number is going to be equal or larger.
Official data suggests that although the age segment has the least share in the number of voters in U.S. elections, 46% of eligible voters aged between 18 and 29 went to the polls in the 2016 presidential election. Several other polls have confirmed that the enthusiasm to vote is growing stronger among the young American population.
I think there's been a lot of effort to mobilize young voters this year, but also in the past couple of years, because we've seen a lot of different issues come on the scene that are important to younger citizens that maybe they feel haven't been addressed adequately by the current administration or even the previous one. And so there's been some motivation to try and get involved and influence election outcomes so they can influence policy in different directions.
According to the data firm Target Smart, more than 40% of the nearly 5 million voters who are voting for the first time are young people under 30 years old. Reporting from Miami, Ronnie Curvello.
French President Macron announced a full national lockdown for at least 1 month. The reason? Positive coronavirus cases doubled or even tripled the last 4 weeks, and the number of fatalities due to the COVID increased drastically. Local lockdowns and curfews are definitely not sufficient to repel the virus. A second lockdown in 6 months' time, many shopkeepers fear for a national bankruptcy.
We will see. For now, we are forced close. As Macron said, we close the restaurants.
The consequences are dramatic for everyone. We in this fast food restaurant have to sell quickly the meat and the vegetables. Right now, 70 kilos of meat have to be thrown away, vegetables as well. The consequences are even more dramatic for precarious workers.
The first consequence is that we have to close one of our three agencies. Since we're not a basic necessity business, we are obliged to close this evening because it's forbidden for us to organize meetings or general assemblies with co-owners. So starting from tonight, we will suffer a 100% loss of activity.
Bars and restaurants are the most obvious victims of the lockdown, but other sectors are not spared. France is a big airplane manufacturer. Airbus is a European company, but France has an important part in it. The aviation sector is already very affected and will be even more with the second lockdown. Over the year 2020, due to the coronavirus crisis, there will be an estimated -10% economic growth. The unemployment rate will probably go over 10%. Before the end of the year.
Some employees will certainly be fired. They will get partial unemployment benefits because we will not be able to pay their payroll taxes.
We have already been closed for 1 month in March. It has a huge impact on the company's financial health with partial unemployment. I have reduced the number of my employees. I had to fire one.
Macron said that almost 10,000 coronavirus patients will be in intensive care by mid-November. Meanwhile, France has less than 6,000 hospital beds available. The French government hopes that the full lockdown on the entire territory will push back the coronavirus, but the impact on the economy will definitely be catastrophic. Chris Den Hond, Paris.
Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, Justice for All. In Islam, justice, which is an ethical virtue and a human feature, is the most frequently emphasized concept in organizing human relations. Justice, which includes delivering and observing right and respecting human rights, is a moral, legal, philosophical, religious, and at the same time, universal value. So, justice in Islam has been considered the basis of social life and the essence of governing. Although the understanding of justice may differ from country to country, culture to culture, its definitions have some, common aspects that we need to focus on. Justice is to give everybody, Muslim or not, his or her rights, and the true teaching shows what the inalienable rights of all people should be. It is impossible for a believer to be an enemy of a race, color, family, language, or nation. Unfortunately, we live in difficult times where these things have been turned into idol. Sometimes when it comes to justice, we favor the people who happen to have same color as us, same religion as us, same creed as us, same family background as us. We're not really concerned and interested in justice. Rather, we are so interested in these trivial distinctions between different types of people. Well, her or his only hostility is against superstition, oppression, and imperialism. If you want to be a believer, this is the area where you're hostile and where you're biased. And you're biased because of the principles of Islam that, any oppression and any oppressive powers and tyrants and so-called superpowers, we are against them. We are against imperialism. We are against Zionism. But this is all principles-based. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the concept of justice in Islam, and we are saying that Islam is a proponent of justice for all. Now, when we say justice for all, it's a very blanket statement, isn't it? Now, we said that when we say justice for all, we mean that there should be no bifurcation between different denominations based on their race, color, creed, so on and so forth. But when it comes to the oppressors, when it comes to those who are doing injustice in the world, of course we are expected to be biased. We don't say that, these people have rights too. What kind of rights? They're usurping the rights of others. So this is where we resist against them. Other than that, for any genuine, normal human being, there are some inalienable rights that every individual that is on the face of planet Earth possesses. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in chapter 16, verse number 90 says, "Verily, Allah orders justice and good conduct and giving the relatives, and He forbids immorality and bad conduct and oppression. He admonishes you that perhaps you will be reminded." So see how Allah is talking about justice and good conduct as opposed to injustice and oppression, bad conduct and oppression. Justice and good conduct are two traits that are consistently found in all prophets and imams of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parsetoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
A new study has shown that so far in 2020, Americans have purchased at least 17 million firearms. According to Small Arms Analytics, this is more than any other single year since records began. Gun sales across the country had already seen a surge in the spring because of the coronavirus pandemic. But they spiked even higher in the summer of widespread protests and anger over systematic racism. The demonstrations began following the police killing of an African-American, George Floyd. Small Arms Analytics says by August, the U.S. had exceeded last year's total. By September, the U.S. exceeded the highest total ever. It added that the number of guns sold through the end of September 2020 is not only more than last year, it's more than any full year in the last 20 years we have records for. The revelation clearly highlights the levels of unrest the United States has witnessed this year.
There's been a tremendous amount of unrest here in the United States. There has been the Black Lives Matter movement. There's killings almost every day of black people by police and by white supremacists. So there's a real sense of panic among certain parts of the population.
According to the analytics company, the previous record for estimated firearms sold in a single year was 16.6 million. That was in 2016, when Hillary Clinton ran for president against Donald Trump and endorsed a strong gun control platform. Groups that advocate for an end to gun violence say that the surge in firearm sales will only increase the level of domestic violence. According to researchers at the University of California, gun purchases from March to May, linked to the coronavirus pandemic, were also associated with a nearly 8% rise in firearm violence across the United States. That's an estimated 776 additional shooting injuries, with much more ammunition on the streets, there's more fear across the towns and cities of America. A recent report by the Department of Homeland Security says groups and individuals with white supremacist ideologies pose the deadliest terror threat to the United States. Many of these right-wing extremists are armed and have also expressed support for President Trump. The fear is that deadly chaos could ensue if the country's presidential election on Tuesday is disputed by the incumbent. The eldest son of the late civil rights leader Martin Luther King says he fears that the election will bring about another civil war. Martin Luther King III said this is down to the kind of leadership the president has provided.
Without saying it, you know, the president doesn't say that, but he says what he needs to give people comfort in feeling that it's all right for them to say that this is what's going to happen. They themselves have said we're getting prepared for the Civil War. But everybody is buying ammunition, and it's not one side, by the way. You've got Democrats and Republicans who are gunning up.
Gun owners say months of sustained demand for firearms this year has resulted in a shortage of guns and ammunition. Long queues have been seen at gun stores. The highest sales are adding millions of weapons to a nation that already has more guns than people. With increased political polarization, racial tensions, and anger at coronavirus deaths, as well as lockdown restrictions, those post-election fears are not going to disappear. As one of the world's most talented and prolific strikers playing for Manchester United, Marcus Rashford is no stranger to hardship in spite of his recent success. Having grown up in a single-parent family in one of the poorest parts of Manchester, Rashford himself knows what it's like to go hungry, hence why his passionate plea to feed Britain's children recently earned him an MBE.
People have opinions, whether or not they understand fully what the families are going through. Another conversation, but because of that it's easy for me to sort of dismiss a lot of the people that are making their opinions, because you know I know for sure that a lot of them speaking the way that they're speaking, it's so insensitive about the issue, and they've definitely not been through it themselves, and so for me it's, you know, I'll take that all day long, as long as we start to see improvements going forward for the people that are in need of it.
However, in spite of his ongoing campaign and recent effort to convince the UK government to continue to feed the UK's poorest children during the half-term school holidays, it seems that Marcus Rashford has been left in despair as Tory MPs have voted against his idea. The government rejection has been confirmed and approved by Boris Johnson, who has ratified the vote, stating that he refuses to move on free meals for children during the half-term period, in spite of growing pressure from the public for the PM to meet Rashford face-to-face. Although the UK really doesn't care to admit it, the introduction of a so-called tier system lockdown is essentially a national lockdown in disguise, and it's during this challenging time, with parents out of work and schools closed, that there's currently one-fifth of the UK children going hungry right now. Yet when one looks deeper at the figures in the UK, the situation appears to be really dire, with 15 million people in Britain living in poverty, which equates to around 22% of the population. Of these, 5 million of them are children, showing that the UK, as a supposedly developed nation, has deep secrets that it should not be proud of. Add to this the situation that for many school children in the UK, due to the extreme poverty, abusive parents, lack of social care, and a failing government, for many kids the only meal of the day comes from school. This also comes on top of the introduction of uniform washing facilities in certain schools, as such luxuries for some are only in fairy tales, which for the UK appears to have no happy ending in sight. When Boris Johnson won the election in the UK with a huge majority over then Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, the following honeymoon period saw Johnson gain huge popularity across the UK, in part helped by the wave of former Labour supporters who turned to the Tories over the notion of Brexit. But skip forward to today, and the people of Britain who voted for Johnson, namely the working class Northerners, are now being abandoned by the government, who are failing their children as well as the people, when it comes to job security and the handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. In fact, when one breaks down the failures by Johnson, all of them have an adversely high effect on the poorest populations of the country. As mentioned, there are children going hungry. The handling of the Brexit negotiations, which are likely to see the UK come crashing out of the EU with no deal, and the terrible handling of the pandemic, which has seen the NHS collapse, testing fail, a death rate in excess of 45,000 people, and around 100,000 people per day newly infected. Yet in spite of all this, Boris Johnson's able to find himself in front of the cameras, claiming that he'll not let the British people suffer, or the children go hungry.
Well, let's be absolutely clear. We're going to make sure that we have no children, no kids, no pupils in our country who go hungry this winter, certainly not as a result of any government inattention. We're focusing on that, as we have done very, very hard over the last few months. And we've given, you know, huge sums to local councils to help them out, but also specific sums for helping with meals during what was a very disrupted period.
Yet with Britain clearly becoming the laughing stock of Europe, it seems that the only way to judge the Conservative government of Boris Johnson is through humour, which, as seen in this picture, shows Johnson's front bench openly mocking the situation British children find themselves in. The point, however, that Johnson should be most worried about is, why did it take a Manchester United football player to raise the issue that children are going hungry? Surely this should have been the job of the UK government. And as Marcus Rashford continues to fire on all cylinders, it seems that Boris Johnson is missing the target.
The French president has faced a huge backlash in his views against Islam. Emmanuel Macron's comments on the denunciation of Islam and in defense of secularism have drawn widespread backlash from Muslim activists and advocates of the noble religion. Iran's foreign minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has denounced France's stance on insults to Muslims and their sanctities, saying such moves are opportunistic abuse of freedom of speech that would only fuel extremism. Zarif also added that Muslims are the primary victims of the cult of hatred that has been empowered by colonial regimes. Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, also advised the French president to read more history and not to rejoice in the support of a declining America and Zionism.
I mean, it's quite clear, like, we know that, like, everybody knows the history of what France did in Algeria, okay? They occupied that place for 200 years, humiliating, mass murdering, massacres, you know, breaching Islamic laws, and disrespecting the Muslims as a whole. And they've also, you know, done a lot of colonial projects inside France in different areas.
Iran has also summoned the French chargé d'affaires to protest the anti-Muslim comments by the country's president. Meanwhile, Muslims have attended protests in Bangladesh, Iraq, Palestine, Pakistan, and many other countries, calling for a boycott of French goods. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has criticized Macron, saying the French leader needed mental checks over his attitude towards Islam. A boycott of French products is already underway in supermarkets in the Persian Gulf kingdoms of Qatar and Kuwait. It's also been demanded in Jordan and Turkey. Macron has unveiled a plan to defend France's secular values against what he labeled as Islamist radicalism. He's also claimed that the religion was in crisis all over the world. Macron has underlined that no concessions would be made in a new drive to eliminate religion from education and the public sector in the country. The French president also said his government would present a bill in December that would strengthen the country's law that officially separated religion and state. Macron's plans also include restricting funds that Muslim communities receive from abroad, supposedly limiting foreign influence.
As he sees these cartoons and these despicable pictures defaming and disrespecting a highly important figure for Muslims, one of the most highest figures, the Prophet Muhammad, and, you know, with no regards to these people's feelings. So, you know, we're talking about French Muslim citizens, and we're talking about the Muslims in the world. We're talking about 1.9 billion Muslims that are affected by this, you know.
Macron's comments came less than a month after Muslim protesters censured Charlie Hebdo, a French weekly satirical magazine, for its recent reprinting of blasphemous caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. A second event, the killing of teacher Samuel Paty, who had shown the blasphemous cartoons in his class, has led to further upset. While Muslims condemned the gruesome killing, the response from French officials had been perceived as linking Islam with terrorism. There are also fears of collective punishment.
I mean, it's not in the interest of France, because they have a majority of Muslims compared to the whole West. I mean, they have the biggest population of Muslims in the Western world.
It's believed Macron needs to fight systemic racism in his country and provide opportunities for Muslims who have been radicalized at the margins of French society. It's also been suggested that Macron's secularist push is partly efforts to gain votes in the upcoming elections. The rise of far-right ideology and the propagation of anti-immigration policies have exacerbated the status of religious minorities in France.
A knife-wielding assailant terrorized France on Thursday. The 21-year-old man brutally stabbed several people to death at the Notre Dame Basilica in Nice. The heinous stabbing had echoes of another attack earlier this month in the capital, in which a teacher was beheaded after having shown pupils cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. French President Emmanuel Macron was quick on Thursday to denounce the attack in Nice as an act of, quote, Islamist terrorism. The deadly knife attack comes as France is mired in an escalating row with Muslim nations over Macron's highly controversial approach towards Islam and Muslims in France. The row has been fueled by Macron's defense of cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad, which Muslims consider blasphemous. The French president says free speech and secular values are his red lines. He has pledged to push ahead with his plan to combat, quote, Islamist separatism. The French president insists that Islam is in crisis all over the world and that radical Muslim positions are hardening. Muslim leaders and scholars have condemned terrorist attacks in France, but have warned that provocative comments by Macron are fueling hatred and extremism. Muslims argue that a line must be drawn between free speech and insult to religions. Meanwhile, the United Nations warned on Thursday that insulting religions provokes violent extremism, leading to fragmentation of the society. But Macron is not listening at all. Why is he refusing to see that his deeply divisive statements are somehow destroying what's left of tolerance in the French society? The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, called the French president's defense of the blasphemous cartoons a stupid act. The leader said French people should ask their president why he supports insulting God's messenger in the name of freedom of expression. Iran's foreign minister Mohammad Javad Zarif condemned the terrorist attack in Nice. Zarif said hate speech, provocations and violence must be replaced by reason and sanity. Meanwhile, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who has been outspoken in his condemnation of Macron, says Western countries attacking Islam want to relaunch the Crusades. Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan urged Muslim leaders this week to act collectively to counter growing Islamophobia in non-Muslim states. Anti-France sentiments are running high in Muslim countries around the globe. There have been protests in many Muslim countries, including Indonesia, Pakistan, Iraq, Syria, and Libya, which drew hundreds of thousands of demonstrators. Traders and people in many countries are boycotting French goods in response to France's anti-Islam campaign. Politicians in Europe have, however, been reluctant to acknowledge that radical statements and stances by top European officials are fueling the flames of extremism. Many European leaders have rallied around Macron and criticized attacks on him. The ongoing tensions may abate in the coming days or weeks, but they are likely to rise again in the future if politicians and top officials fail to respect religions and listen to reason.
President Donald Trump embarked on a blistering final campaign sprint on Sunday, 1st of November, lining up 10 rallies in 7 swing states over 2 days in an effort to defy the opinion polls and replicate his shock election win in 2016. As he did so, it was reported that he's planning to declare victory on Tuesday, before the results are called. Citing 3 anonymous sources familiar with his private comments, the news website Axios said Donald Trump has told confidants that he'll declare victory on Tuesday night if it looks like he's ahead. The article you're about to hear has been written by Guardian columnist Julian Borger and Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, Trump Says He's Preparing for Legal Challenges to Vote Counts as Final Sprint Begins. Stay with us for more of Julian Borger and Martin Pengelly's article. Trump embarked on a blistering final campaign sprint on Sunday, 1st of November, lining up 10 rallies in 7 swing states over 2 days in an effort to defy the opinion polls and replicate his shock election win in 2016. As he did so, it was reported that he's planning to declare victory on Tuesday before the official results are announced. Citing 3 anonymous sources familiar with his private comments, the news website Axios said Donald Trump has told confidants that he'll declare victory on Tuesday night if it looks like he's ahead. That's even if the Electoral College outcome still hinges on large numbers of uncounted votes in key states, such as Pennsylvania. Axios added, Trump has privately talked through his scenario in some detail in the last few weeks, describing plans to walk up to a podium on election night and declare that he has won. For this to happen, his allies expect he would need to either win or have commanding leads in many states like Ohio, Florida, North Carolina, Texas, Iowa, Arizona, and Georgia. President Trump has denied the Axios story, describing it as false, but then confirmed he would try to shut down vote counting as soon as the polls close on Tuesday, 3rd of November. I don't think it's fair that we have to wait for a long time after the election, the president told journalists in North Carolina. As soon as the election is over, we're going in with our lawyers. Asked about the Axios report, Donald Trump's Democratic challenger Joe Biden said, "My response is that the president's not going to steal this election." According to 538.com, Donald Trump leads in Ohio, Texas, and Iowa, whilst Joe Biden leads in Florida, North Carolina, Georgia, and Arizona. The races are all exceptionally tight. The biggest lead in the 538.com polling average is Joe Biden by 3 percentage points in Arizona. The smallest lead is Donald Trump by 0.2 percentage point in Ohio. Under the coronavirus pandemic, early and mail-in voting has reached unprecedented levels, fueling expectations of record turnout, but also fears that many states will take longer than usual to count their ballots. Donald Trump's tactics, according to the Axios website, will depend on continuing to claim without evidence that ballots counted after Election Day are illegitimate and evidence of voter fraud. Vote counting after Election Day is a regular feature of U.S. elections, of course. In another twist on the campaign trail, the FBI confirmed on Sunday that it was investigating an incident in which a convoy of vehicles flying Donald Trump flags surrounded a bus carrying campaign staff for Democratic challenger Joe Biden on a Texas highway. FBI San Antonio in Texas is aware of the incident and investigating it. Special Agent Michelle Lee, a spokeswoman for the Federal Bureau of Investigation in San Antonio, told Reuters news agency in an email. No further information is available at this time. Many of Donald Trump's claims about alleged fraud have focused on Pennsylvania, where the race is close, but where votes counted after 3rd of November are expected to favor the Democratic challenger Joe Biden, who leads most national and battleground polls. Both candidates campaigned heavily in the state this weekend. Pennsylvania is critical to this election, Joe Biden told a drive-in rally in Philadelphia on Sunday evening, describing the president as an obstacle to defeating the coronavirus pandemic. "To beat the virus, we first got to beat Donald Trump," Biden said. "He's the virus." Democrats have long worried that Trump will declare victory early, aiming to sow uncertainty and legal battles over ballots and results. Some observers have called the tactic the Red Mirage, which former Housing Secretary Julian Castro said this week sounds like a supervillain and is just as insidious. On election night, 3rd of November, there's a real possibility that the data will show Republicans leading early, before all the votes are counted, Castro said. Then they can pretend something sinister is going on when the counts change in Democrats' favor. On Sunday, on CNN's State of the Union, an advisor to Joe Biden, Anita Dunn, said she thought the victor would be known sometime on 4th of November, the day after the election. A lot of the early states that are battleground states, especially in the Sun Belt, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, are states that tend to get their votes counted on election night, Anita Dunn said. "I think we will get some sort of indicator what kind of night it's going to be from those three states. We will see. Obviously, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin may be slower to count their vote." The Pennsylvania official in charge of elections, Secretary of State Kathy Buchbaugh, a Democrat, told NBC's Meet the Press, "There could be 10 times as many mail-in ballots than in 2016. She added, "I expect that the overwhelming majority of ballots in Pennsylvania, that's mail-in and absentee ballots, as well as in-person ballots, will be counted within a matter of days." Axios says Donald Trump campaign was bullish about key states including Texas, Nevada, North Carolina, Arizona, and Wisconsin. On ABC's This Week, Trump advisor Jason Miller claimed, "If you speak with many smart Democrats, they believe President Trump will be ahead on election night, probably getting 280 electoral votes, somewhere in that range, and then they're going to try to steal it back after the election. We believe that will be over 290 electoral votes on election night, so no matter what they try to do, what kind of hijinks or lawsuits or whatever kind of nonsense they try to pull off, we're still going to have enough electoral votes to get President Trump re-elected." Jason Miller's claim rested on the idea that all ballots must be counted on election day, a legal and political nonsense. Nonetheless, the Trump campaign communications director Tim Murtaugh told Axios website, "When he wins, he's going to say so." Donald Trump's final 2020 tour, which began on Sunday, 1st of November in Michigan, is aimed at holding states he won 4 years ago and shoring up support in traditional Republican strongholds like North Carolina and Georgia. Joe Biden was due to hold two drive-in meetings in Pennsylvania, one of a string of former Democratic bastions in the Northeast, which Donald Trump won from Hillary Clinton by less than a percentage point. New opinion polls showed Joe Biden holding on to a lead in Pennsylvania. The New York Times and Siena College gave the Democrat a 6 percentage point edge, whilst the Washington Post and ABC News showed a 7 percentage point margin. In Michigan, Donald Trump repeated some of the messages that worked in 2016, highlighting the impact of globalization on the car industry. "I gave you a lot of auto plants, so I think we're even," he told a crowd at a wind and rain swept rally in Washington. One new car plant has been announced since Donald Trump took office, whilst Michigan automotive jobs had fallen by 2,400 even before the COVID-19 pandemic. Employment in the sector is down more than 18,000 in the state, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Donald Trump's other principal line of attack was to warn voters that Joe Biden would implement a drastic lockdown that will kill jobs. The president has insisted the nation has turned the corner despite record numbers of new COVID-19 cases across the country and warnings of a spike in deaths over the winter. Trump insisted on holding mass rallies with no social distancing, at which very few people wear face masks. A study by Stanford University in California estimated that at least 30,000 coronavirus infections and 700 deaths caused by 18 Trump rallies between June and September. "We're in for a lot of hurt," Anthony Fauci, the country's leading expert on infectious diseases, told the Washington Post. "It's not a good situation. All the stars are aligned in the wrong place. As you go into the fall and winter season with people congregating at home indoors, you could not possibly be positioned more poorly." NBC and Wall Street Journal opinion poll on Sunday put Joe Biden 10 points up, a majority of voters saying they were unhappy with President Trump's handling of the pandemic and the direction that the country is taking. The same opinion poll 4 years ago had Hillary Clinton up, but only by 4 percentage points. In 2016, there were many more undecided and third-party voters. The Trump camp has stepped up signals that they will look to Republican-leaning courts to cast doubt on the integrity of the enormous volume of postal ballots. In Texas, a federal court will hear a lawsuit on Monday aimed at having 117,000 votes in Houston thrown out because they were cast at curbside ballot boxes set up to make voting easier during the pandemic, which the Republican plaintiffs argue was illegal. The Texas Supreme Court has twice rejected a similar argument, but a federal court in Houston, Texas, has agreed to hear the case. Meanwhile, speaking to reporters on Sunday evening, 1st of November, President Trump denied that he would declare victory prematurely. He added, "I think it's a terrible thing when ballots can be collected after an election. I think it's a terrible thing when states are allowed to tabulate ballots for a long period of time after the election is over." Trump added, "I think it's terrible that we can't know the result of an election the night of the election. We're going to go into the night of, as soon as the elections are over, we're going in with our lawyers. We don't want to have Pennsylvania where you have a political governor, a very partisan guy. We don't want to be in a position where he's allowed every day to watch ballots come in, see if we can only find 10,000 more ballots." Behind the scenes, though, President Trump has privately talked through this scenario in some detail in the last few weeks, describing plans to walk up to a podium on election night, 3rd of November, and declare victory.
Thank you. علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Ja'far Sobhani. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. والصلاة والسلام على خير خلقه وآله الطاهرين.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Praise be to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and may His peace and blessings be upon the best of His creation, Prophet Muhammad, and His pure progeny. Trust and faith in the aim carries the astronauts high up into the thresholds of this. They risk their lives to discover the mysteries of space and exploit them for the benefit of mankind. They struggle hard, relentlessly, and courageously to attain this goal. 1400 years ago, the Muslims were not more than 313 in the number, and they did not have enough weapons when they faced powerful army of Quraysh at Badr. From the viewpoint of warfare experts, there was a remote chance of the Muslim victory. It was unimaginable that such a little group of Muslims would scatter the powerful army of Quraysh. But contrary to the thinking of the materialists, the small group which was armed with faith overpowered the physically strong opponents within hours. The cause of the victory of the tiny majority was the same faith which had made it very easy for them to sacrifice their lives in the path to their goal. This truce was also accepted by their enemies. Before the bad encounter, a brave soldier of the unbelievers was asked to ascertain the material and spiritual power of the Muslims. He said, "Though the Muslims are much less than us in number and also inferior in material power, they are much more strong in spirituality and steadfastness in the paths of their religion. They are a group whose shield is their sword. None of them would die unless and until he kills at least one of your warriors. What can we gain when they kill an equal number of our men?" Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Ja'far Sobhani. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care, and goodbye.
I
KRIB English Radio.